always record episode 137. Say again?
You have some stuff on your mind?
Well, yeah, I got some weird shit. Definitely some weird shit going on. You know, we did this always record 135, which was the Alex Fulton, Dennis Cook, and SJ Anderson, right? And basically, they had sent me the audio, and the whole idea sounded to me like, first off, just three guys chatting that wasn't us. It immediately, my mind went to, like, alternate universe always record, right?
Uh-huh.
And so that was sort of just how I, like, wrote up the description and everything and sort of had some fun with that, if that was, like, our bizarro always record crew. But, you know, that's, I have to be honest, part of the reason probably my mind went there is, like, it's been on my mind. If I think chronologically, regardless, what was the cause and effect or what came first or, like, where I start thinking the idea. But I've been thinking a lot about, did you see Rodney Asher's The Nightmare?
Yeah.
Yeah, how recently did you see that?
Like in the last 2 weeks or something.
Cool, okay.
Yeah,
I saw it on Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And it was definitely, like, what struck me is how they touch on the idea of, like, they even touch on the idea of Mothman and aliens and just sort of, like, a psychic state where you could kind of perceive something else. But, like, right, so this is the distinction between the sleep paralysis state and hallucination would be, in the sleep paralysis state, you have the surroundings are the same. It's just this one unique element is added to it, right? The visitor or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the surroundings haven't changed, so it's not exactly a straight-up hallucination. It's not like shit's all trippy, necessarily. It's like, this is the surrounding, plus you're able, if we want to, this is a very loaded and, like, specific terminology, but you know what I mean, like, almost like able to see this thing you wouldn't be able to see otherwise.
Right. It's like the goggles from fucking Emerald City that you love to discuss.
Yeah. Or They Live glasses or something, right?
Sure. Put these on.
Right. So, of course, you know, we could throw in the question of, like, are you actually seeing something that, you know, is it like literally like that, where you're seeing this thing that's there that normally we don't see, or is it something else, right? Like a very complex hallucination.
Yeah, the most terrifying thing in that film, for me, like the most uncanny thing, is when there's the creature that, not that it's on his chest and it's speaking to him and it's telling him all these things, but it's the experience of his girlfriend or wife or whatever who's there next to him, who literally saw the thing on top of him speaking in another language,
mm-hmm,
from her perception. That is the scariest fucking thing.
That's amazing. We both found that same scene so striking. Yeah, I don't know why that was so scary to me.
Well, because of the implications. No longer one's private fucking thing. It's, no, you're literally, and it's not just that she's seen it on top of him. It's that she's hearing it from as an outsider, from his, you know, I mean, it's there, it's in her
face.
It's like fucking David Lynch's Rabbits, when the rabbit disappears and the mother disappears in the other room and she comes out with the candle holder and she talks to the fucking alien creature over and over again. I don't know if you've seen David Lynch's Rabbits. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
In Wind Empire?
No, in David Lynch's film Rabbits, or it's like a sitcom from hell thing. We've had to have talked about this before, dude.
Is that different from Inland Empire? Am I thinking of the wrong movie? In Inland Empire, they're constantly watching these, like, rabbit people on a stage.
Right. Well, this was like I'm no expert on Lynch or whatever, but from my like this is just a show of just rabbits. There's nothing else, and it's like that chick from Beetlejuice, and I don't know. It's crazy. But anyways, I'm just speaking to that's there's something really scary about this whole. Oblivious to something
Sorry,
that's happening.
it's here. Yeah, I just looked it up and it's saying it was originally consisting of a series of 8 short episodes exclusively shown on Lynch's website. In addition, the set and some footage of the rabbits are reused in Lynch's Inland Empire.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah, we are talking about the same thing, but apparently in one it's just sort of like this other world that they get to view, and you're saying there's more to that. There's more
Right,
footage.
well, it's got the whole substratum thing going on, where it's like what you're saying, where it's like there's one thing happening, and then we're relating to it on a completely different plane, so we see it differently. We don't see it, what's underneath it, and so yeah, that's the principle of the matter that's so fucking scary.
Wow. Yeah, I would love to see, because I love the costumes and the set. I'd love to see more of that.
The Rob Asher's film kind of struck a chord with me because I've had sleep paralysis my whole life. If I sleep on my back, I have lucid sleep paralysis. So I always sleep on my side unless if I'm like wanting to go there. It just happens. It's happened to me since in my early 20s, But I mean, it happened to me when I was young, but it just increased in frequency as I got older. And extremely long breaths. Where it just keeps going and going, where it just like, how could I possibly breathe any deeper? And then you're still breathing deeper. The sensation of waves, of like tonal, vibration increasing in that whole thing. But the th thing that I thought was crazy with the whole movie is like there was no everybody's. Experience with it was one of relying on intense resistance as their strength. And I thought that was so strange. That's not like consciousness is an annihilator of all of that shit. Like it doesn't care. If you release into that experience completely, it's this whole other thing. It's like a massive primordial vibrational thing that happens, and it's totally out of time,
Right, it's almost like the nightmare comes from resisting, right? Like
Right.
from
There is no
the ten
nightmare
you're
other
creating
than
the
that.
tension. You're
That's,
literally creating
yeah.
the tension.
Right. And it
It's
doesn't mean that
almost
those things
like
aren't there, relatively speaking, on some plane of existence.
sure.
It's just that they don't matter in the eye of fucking consciousness. It fucking wipes, none of them can come near it. That's like the joke. That's like the thing with in Poltergeist is that they all want the girl, but they can't ever, they're attracted to her radiance or beauty, or the innocence of the thing, but they can't have it. Or they want the life force, but they can't have the life force. So it's this whole issue there.
I would assume you would take that similarly in like say like a psychedelic panic attack.
Well, I mean, there's no amount of resistance. Here's the solution to this. Let's just get very tense. I don't know how to get out of this. I don't know. Maybe we should just get really tense. And it doesn't, it's a, it's what Martin Luther King was shouting over and over again about people doing something that's the complete opposite of the end they're trying to achieve and think that some amount of this opposite of the end I'm trying to achieve will bring about this other end, It's like a complete misunderstanding of cause and effect or whatever.
Okay, so I mean, listen, I've never had sleep paralysis. Both Will Morgan and you have, so I'd like to hear, I'd like to hear more your experience of even so, like we have The Nightmare, the film does a really good job of showing what happens when you're resisting the experience and laying out some of the other like encounters. I'd be curious to know when you're saying by not resisting, you slip into this vibratory sensation. Is it, can you describe that anymore or?
Yeah, it's like a, it's just a really, it's like a deep tonal thing. It's like I can literally hear it, you know, or like waves, like literally like water, you know, and it increases in frequency. So it's like whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. And so, and then the breath, the key is to be really relaxed with the breath, because you can have a total panic attack because you can't breathe. And so you think you're going to die. And so you know, and you can't move your body, and you know you're laying there. And so there's commonly like the sensation of somebody else in the fucking room. And that's terrifying. It's like total terror. But I had this crazy realization that the most profound and the first profound experience I had with sleep, because I had a lot of sleep paralysis, but the time that it just like blew me away was when the first night I spent at Mount Madonna. And I think the reason why it happened this way is because I was reading later that if you change your surroundings, it's more common. Like, so if you're sleeping someplace that's unusual for you. So I was like literally in a tent in the woods by myself.
They do cover that in the movie, right, where the guy says if he goes to different places, he encountered different spirits. But what you're saying almost sounds...
I'm saying that you're more likely to go
right,
in.
Saying sounds to me like... the way people have drug overdoses, you know, how you actually build your mind builds up a tolerance to certain substances if you're always taking in the same place. So like a heroin addict, they can every time they're in their house, they come home from work and they take heroin and they take this much, blah, 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 or whatever it is. But your body knows, oh, every day I come home and I'm going to take it at this time.
Oh, the ritual. The ritual
right.
Aspect.
So your body actually starts to prepare for the intake of the drug. But then let's say today, instead of coming home to do heroin, I'm going to go to my friend's house and I take it there. And then boom, I take the same amount I normally would and suddenly I have this massive overdose and die. It's because the body didn't know to armor itself for that moment, right?
Right.
So definitely. That's just a common thing with literal case studies of drug overdoses. What you're saying almost sounds the same thing, where you're going to this different place. Now suddenly your sleep experience or what you're encountering something different. Is it? I'm sort of throwing out a quasi, not scientific, but you know, like a.
Yeah, well, it's a completely different context of something. So your paradigm. So I'm in a different paradigm because when I was, are you still there?
I'm still here. I just muted.
Oh, okay. When I was in India, it happened every night, which was crazy. Like, I mean, I would have periods where it would happen, you know, frequently, but it was like it was ridiculous. And I think it was because I was in such a different place. But the thing is. The most important point of the whole deal is that when I would come out of it and I didn't know where I was. It was like blanket. It's like if you're hypnotized or something, you don't know where you were, you know, but you know that there was energy. So like it was energy. And then I'm like, and then it's like, but the sensation of, and the perception of somebody being in the space, the intense, it's like there's somebody else here. I was absolutely certain that the reason why underneath my fear of somebody else there was because I could hear the voice return of who I would relate to as myself, like literally my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So there was literally a gap in consciousness, but it was only increased. It was like in the gap, it was like overflowing with energy. So so like coming out of it, I sensed that there was somebody else present. And it's terrifying because I don't know. It's like, you know, this was a fucking thing. But then I realized it was me. And that to have that reintroduced, it comes with all of it. So you have birth, growth, decay, and death and the whole fucking dualistic everything, you know. And then it was like that all comes in this package as soon as you identify with this thought. So it's like I experienced not identifying with the thought form and there was no form. And then it was like when the form got reintroduced, it was just, it was, you know, like the most terrifying thing I could imagine.
Can I ask just one more question about when you say if you're able to release into it, and you mentioned the whole whooshing and all that. Since everyone in the documentary at least is giving accounts of like a very visual experience.
Yeah.
Is there any visual element to your experience upon the release?
On the flip side?
Yeah.
Because that doesn't happen like that all the time. I mean, that's like a rare occurrence to surrender to it. The rest of the time, it's like total. Like, I will get up and I will turn on my light, and my light won't go on. And I'll fucking walk through my house, and I'll oftentimes stumble around like I can't find my way, and I'll fall into shit. And I'll swear to God, I fucking got up and walked around my house, and all the lights are out. And then I like go down, like I'll be here. I'll go down the stairs. I'll do this whole thing, but. You know, that's been happening for fucking years. And then it'll come back. It was these false awakenings. But it's so real. And then it'll be accompanied by paralysis where I can feel when I return, like, then I know that I'm sleeping and it's this whole lucid thing. I can't move my body. But then I'm like, oh, but I can. And so I'm moving my body, but I'm not. It's like, and I keep returning to this, like, you know, intense energy rigidity thing. You know, but it's like it's rejuvenating is the point. No one fucking mentioned that in the thing. I was like,
I'm sorry. I just want to ask that question again. So you're sleepwalking, or you're like sleep astral project walking or some shit, right?
Right.
But again, when you said that you have been able to surrender into the moment and not tense up, I'm asking, in those instances, has there been a visual element?
Not in the gap, but on both sides, it's flanked by like lots of visual element. Yeah.
Okay. So, and I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm just really curious. Again, sort of going back to that idea of, is it like the They Live glasses or the whatever? Like, I just feel like that might be an interesting thing if they're tensing up and seeing a nightmare, but if you were relaxing and seeing something.
Oh, it's totally insightful. It's deep, deep insight can come with that. Yeah. Cause you can meditate on things on a whole other level in paralysis. If there's something that's like, if you're philosophically oriented and there's something that you want to introduce, if you're lucid and you're having a lucid paralysis experience, you can get deep, deep hits of fucking information that way. Yeah.
Well, are that's you
easily
here?
Translated. Yeah, William.
Hello.
Hey, buddy.
How's it going, boss?
Oh, you know, trying to keep my employees in line.
Was that a boss comment or really?
No, no. I have
are you really the boss?
For me. No, I have munchkins that they do shit for me.
Oh, that's weird you say that. I got Michaela J. I don't know if you guys have listened to the stuff that I did with Michaela J., but a lot of what her symbol set has to do with is the Wizard of Oz. So she sent me this picture of Dorothy and Glinda the Good Witch, and it says, I'm quoting this directly from the internet meme, Glinda dropped Dorothy's house on the Wicked Witch of the East, not the tornado, and uses her to gain control of Oz. One of the first things Glinda tells Dorothy is that she killed the witch. They praise her so that she'll accept it. And when the Witch of the West comes along, who killed her sister? Dorothy. Glinda then puts the ruby slippers on Dorothy's feet, but does not tell her that she can use them to go home. Instead, she sends Dorothy to Oz in possession of objects that a witch would murder her for. Dorothy, being forced into a situation where her only salvation is Oz and her worst enemy is the Queen, inadvertently exposes the Wizard of Oz as a fraud and murders the Wicked Witch of the West. Now who's left to rule Oz? Glinda fucking Witch of the North. She used Dorothy as an expendable pawn to gain control of Oz without having to leave her bubble.
Right.
And when Dorothy is done upheaving the two biggest pawns of our powers of Oz, Glinda sends her home and makes her think it was all a dream.
Right.
So
what do you think of you know the film Julia from 1977 about World War II and whatever? It's with fucking what's her name? Bridget Fonda, or yeah. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Julia,
1977.
I don't think I've seen this, but I'm Googling it.
Okay, there's this crazy recurring frequency of fucking Dorothy. So, and I'm saying this has so much behind it, because I know you know the Julia trip with the haunting of Julia and fucking John Lennon's mom and all the Julia stuff, because Julia means Jupiter's child.
Right. Right.
And so the song Julia, Ocean's Child, and all this stuff, which if you know, with the White Album, you know, you have this whole thing, Inception.
Right. My wife's name is Julia, by the way.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So it's just, there's this reoccurrence. So I've been writing this thing up, which I'm just about done with, and I'm going to record it for a thing I'm doing with Alan, showing the Summer of 42 with an introduction at the beginning. And I'm realizing, okay, well, the character's name... in the story, the woman who the boy is infatuated with is named Dorothy. And then I saw that in this film, Julia. So the woman who plays Julia in the film Julia from 1977 is named Dorothy, the actress. And
Julia from, it says Vanessa Redgrave.
Vanessa Redgrave. No, there was this whole, somebody in it somehow. There's a Julia.
There's a Dorothy Parker as one of the characters in the story, and her name is, the actress who plays her is Rosemary Murphy.
Oh, that was it. Okay, there we go.
That's kind of freaky.
I'm super sick. I've been in a total sick psychedelic space, and so my nose was pouring. Now I'm okay, and it's nice to have a conversation because I've been very hermited. But anyways, yeah, so that was tripping me out. So the
Rosemary okay, so Jane Fonda plays Lillian Hellman.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, her last name is Hellman.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and then, of course, there's Vanessa Redgrave as Julia, and then Rosemary Murphy as Dorothy Parker.
Right.
Meryl Streep is in that, too.
Right. But there was I was gonna go somewhere with all of this.
You were talking about the Dorothy connection, Rosemary, and how that had to fit.
Right, it just goes on and on. So it's like you got fucking Valley of the Dolls is a film about according to what's her name, the fucking main girl in Valley of the Dolls, it's Judy Garland. So they're portraying Judy Garland. Judy Garland is on this, you know, she's doing these screen tests, and they're giving her all these barbiturates and wine, like, and she's showing up, and she's there all day, and she's all fucked up. You can watch the screen tests on YouTube. They're crazy. But this whole thing is that they're playing Judy Garland. Then you have fucking Whatever Happened to Rosemary's Baby. The fucking woman who's playing Judy Garland is playing Rosemary. What's her fucking name? I'm losing it right now. Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah, I turned off my internet because I didn't want to fuck up the recording. Weird. But, yeah, whoever the fucking main chick is in Valley of the Dolls, that's the deal.
Okay.
I spoke to both of you last week on the phone while I was driving to work, and which one of you was going off about Munchkins and Mark David Chapman? And I assume that was you, David?
Yeah.
That had to be. I've been thinking a lot about The Wizard of Oz, but that had to be. Look, hold on a second, because I'm still stuck on this Julian tip, or this Julia tip.
It keeps going because they're repeating the whole point is the Golden Bough, as far as I'm concerned. Not the Golden Bough, but the rituals described in the Golden Bough.
Go ahead.
John Lennon has this whole fool association. You can look up through his whole life and his relationship with his father all corresponds to fucking April Fool's Day. There's an insane synchronicity with him and April Fool's. And he's the fool on the hill. It's this whole deal. And 1-1 and 1 is 3 because the fucking my prophet is a fool with his 1-1-1. And there's all this crazy stuff around that. But the thing is that the fool is the one who picks the branch challenging the king if he defeats the king, he marries the king's daughter. But the thing that Crowley was obsessed with the golden bough, was that you're looking at royalty. So you have Imen Abba, right? So you have the mother and the father, and then you have the son and the daughter. So you have Hochma, Bina, Tiferet, and Malkut. And so, but the whole point of the fool is that the fool has to be from, you know, he's the lowest class. So you have the last becomes first. You have the slave kills the fucking king. And then he restores the kingdom because he knows how to turn everything. He knows how to flip it over in order to keep it going, because the roots are the branches. This is the whole point of, like, you know, circulating the fucking energy. You don't keep it in the family forever. You're going to strangle the thing to death. And so this is the whole fault of Babel. This is the meaning of Babel, is the refusal to fucking do that. And so the thing is, you know, I was tripping out on this fact that we keep killing the king. You got Martin Luther King, 1999. It went to trial. Those guys in the CIA were held accountable for fucking a government conspiracy to kill Martin Luther King, though it was never on the news. But the thing is that you got, you know, the John Kennedy, obviously, his thing with Camelot, you know, whatever. The Lizard King, you know, whatever, people could argue about that. But this, the point is that you have the fucking, you know, the people who are the fools playing the fool card, playing the archetype, and then they get killed. Every time you're watching that, it's all happening, set up as if it were the actual ritual in the Golden Bough, except everything's reversed. So instead of it happening the way that one would expect, it has all the principal dynamics of the thing, but all turned around towards fucking killing the fool. So he's become the scapegoat. And so that's Christianity in a fucking nutshell. And that's the significance of Spartacus. And that's fucking blowing my mind. You guys, like, you know, what? Like, I'm like, okay, well, he did a fucking, you know, I never looked into the meaning of Spartacus that much, but I stopped and I thought about it. And isn't it fucking weird that, like, all of those people are crucified at the end, and that's the real history of the thing? Mm. And the time frame of the matter? And that these are literally people who were against the grid in public planning. So, like, you know, Rome instituted grids everywhere they went. There's these grids all around the world that, you know, Scott Onstott and people love to, you know, measure and shit. And there's all of this stuff. But it's like, those, like, a town is a 36 square area, you know, miles, 36 mile square area. It's like the standard for a town. I'm like, that's a Babylonian fucking sun square. Isn't this weird? Like, that we
have.
Like,
you know, Scott Onstott actually is funny when you say that. He just posted a picture earlier, which is like an aerial shot of a city, like a city planning in South America.
Yeah, I was just looking at it.
Okay. Have you ever seen, there's a guy who figured out how to, like, oh, I'm going to fuck this up, but I think it was Bill Klaus shared this at some point. A guy figured out how to, like, beat Sim City, like not like the new, like, Sims shit, but like the old, like, you know.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I know it. I know the game for sure. Okay.
All right. So, like, there was, the whole thing was like, can you beat? Like, is there such a thing as beating Sim City? Like,
right, because it's just a constant game. It just,
it's a
goes,
constant game.
Goes,
right. We talked about it with Pac-Man. Because
so this guy,
that fucking...
this guy,
right?
He basically took, do you know the idea of what the Panopticon is?
Yeah, the prison that,
right, it's like the, prison in, city,
yeah,
right,
that keeps people in line through a hall of mirrors, kind of like very Oz like you know what I mean? But it's their minds that create the idea that they're always being watched.
Okay, so I think I just found an article here. Yeah, okay. So this guy, I'm dropping a link here. By the way, I don't know if you guys saw, I just dropped this. While you were talking about the flipping the tree, this Thomas Jefferson quote.
Yeah.
Made me think of, the tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. That is obviously, you know, the same idea of Golden Bough. But so yeah, basically this guy, he built his cities according to a very specific mathematical grid that basically trapped everyone in this space to maximize every component of the game, right? But basically what he built, basically what he builds is like a Matrix version of the Panopticon. All right? And like basically destroys the game. Like it's like it's just this per like it's as if he built the Matrix, this thing that, you know, is the sort of perfect operating system for the game's mathematics. Anyway, this is just one article on the guy that I sent you, and there's a video you can watch and stuff like that. And the guy's theories are, and sort of like the things that he, the guy seems fucking brilliant, and we should totally have him on the show.
Yeah. Okay. Say Magnasanti's design is based on Bhavakara, the wheel of life and death in Buddhism. Are you a practicing Buddhist? Answer to the question, former Buddhist, the wheel of life, also known as the wheel of time or the wheel of history, can be found in many religions, philosophies, and cultures, which regarded cylindrical notions of time consisting of ages that essentially repeat themselves. I'm particularly fascinated with sacred geometry. The city symmetry uses a modified version of the symbol to represent the sinister intent of enslaving all of its citizens for all eternity.
Right. It's the dark tree of life. It's like using the perfect mathematics of sacred geometry, inverting it to turn it into a prison.
Right. And so literally it's a mirror. It works through mirroring. So it's imitating the other side. It's crazy.
But it's weird. You're talking about the wheel of time and the fool card. Isn't that closely related to the wheel in tarot?
That's the magician is the wheel.
No. The wheel. The wheel of fortune. In tarot.
Jupiter. That's 10. That's Kaf.
But I mean, the Wheel of Fortune is literally the Golden Bough. If you look up what's known as the Rota Fortunae, right? Wheel of Fortune, but like it's actually a its own sort of esoteric philosophical symbol outside of the tarot cards.
Huh. And crimson it's literally
at the top of the wheel you have a seated enthroned king.
Right.
So it's like at the top of the wheel it says I rule, and then like on the side the king is falling off his throne and it's like I have ruled, you know, some shit like that. And like he's on the
right.
Then he's like crawling in the mud and it's like my rule is over.
And then Crowley had it that's the three gunas though, right?
Right.
But it's the same aspect.
It's the four seasons. I mean, it's exactly. So, like, it's the four seasons. You know, it's the Sun King
right.
dying and being reborn. And you see, you know, nature going
into the wheel of time would be the Zodiac.
Absolutely, yeah.
This has a lot to do with Oz.
Right. Even Oz, right, is the four-directional city. It is this. Wow, it actually is this SimCity game, isn't
right.
it?
Yeah.
Of course, also Oz and Hebrew being, and the Beauty and the Beast car being Oz in the center of the two pillars. And you could see.
That's the wire.
Right.
That's the whole fucking thing.
Right. So, I mean, but you can also see how the tree is a wheel in and of itself.
Right.
That's fucked up.
The whole thing is fucking crazy. Yeah.
It's bananas. But also, I mean, like what you were saying about the Dorothy is the fool. In a lot of ways.
Well,
Dorothy is the fool who overthrows the king.
With the dog. It's the whole thing. It's just she's, you know.
She has the dog with her. Both.
Which is
both,
serious.
One of my main starting points for the sync videos that I did, if you go back and you look at Isis Incognito, the first image that I show was the dog that... There's also a dog in Alice in Wonderland. There's a thread between Alice in Wonderland and Oz. If you're very conspiratorial, then you'll recognize the relevance that they have as far as MK Ultra is concerned, but they're basically the same story. female protagonist is drenched in this completely unreal reality that has cartoon physics and so forth. But there's a dog that shows up. It's the only character in Alice in Wonderland that does not speak, which is very unusual.
It's basically like a real dog too.
Right.
And it's like a nonsensical character. It's like just a dog. It's a big dog, but it's a dog.
Right. It's a big dog and it plays with her and stuff, but in a lot of ways it represents the same dog that Toto does. And there's been a lot of things about Toto speaking and so forth and blah 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 blah. But they basically represent the same the real aspect of the unreal world that they're living in. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got an OTO in there too.
What do you mean?
Toto has OTO in it.
Oh, Toto is OTO.
but the significance of that is that as soon as you say Oz, it's attached to Joaquin. So you have Joaquin and Boaz, right? So you have established and strength. We all know this. But the center pillar being Sirius, I just recently found out. I told Alan this, but I don't. So Abarak. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. I know how to pronounce a lot of Hebrew words, but I'm not sure about that. I know that it's Barak with an Aleph at the beginning is the word for lightning. Oh, no, excuse me. Let me stand reflected. The word Abarak means Sirius. If you remove the Aleph, it means lightning.
Oh, because I've discovered a lot of pushback on the whole Barak thing.
What do you mean?
Just non-consistencies in what its meaning is.
Oh, no. Well, this is in the Aramaic, Barak means lightning. I can tell you that.
Right. Okay.
It can have other meanings, too. But that's a commonly way that Barak is used. If you add an Aleph, as a matter of fact, it means Sirius. It is the Hebrew word for Sirius.
It's weird because I've come across a lot of symbolism. I can think of at least one, but I know there's another one out there. Where a horse. Okay, so you remember the whole presentation that I did of Viggo Mortensen and Olympia. Well, there's a scene in Hildago where Viggo's calling the horse dog, a big dog.
Uh-huh.
And there's another scene where that happens as well. Oh, I know where it's in Winter's Tale, which is a fucked up movie because it literally has like a Pegasus horse. Or this horse that Colin Farrell keeps calling a horse, and it grows wings and saves him.
I think the whole thing for them, quite well, not the whole thing, but I think that there's a lot of sex magic in the OTO and in the upper echelon, and the horse is a phallic symbol, and that they're also associating with the middle pillar itself, and so they have this whole correlation happening there. It's just a dog,
Well, it's funny because
it's animal nature.
Right, but also changed. Like I'm just saying that it was called dog in two places. Like in Winter's Tale, Russell Crowe keeps referring to the horse that Colin Farrell uses as a dog. He's like, "We got to get rid of that dog." And and then of course there's the whole dick symbolism as far as the horse is concerned is pretty straightforward too. In that presentation that I did, I also sorted how Jung actually said that the horse was lightning and dick and lightning are synonymous. Something probably has to do with the life-giving power of the penis.
Do you remember where you read that?
Yeah, it's in that presentation straight up. Like I sourced it, but it was in The Symbols of Man or something, chapter 8 or something. It was in some.
That's not him then. I mean,
well, he's in it. He's in chapter 8.
I thought he was the first chapter, or it's still quoting him.
All I know is it's him, and it's I think I could be mis
Whichever way, the point is that somebody's making that correlation, which is a fascinating correlation. Well, because so this is the whole thing.
Young makes that correlation, but you know it goes deeper than that because there's actually a scene in Dangerous Method where it's so funny because I didn't even include that, but that particular scene is like the most important scene that connects all of the fucking Michael Fassbender being Young, Viggo Mortensen being Freud, and it actually it says it, you know, Jung says, I had a dream last night, because it's this scene where Jung and Freud are talking for like 12 hours straight. And he's like, I had a dream last night that there was this horse that was dragging this log around, blah, 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 blah. And Viggo Mortensen, as Freud goes, do you ever consider that the horse was the penis, or you know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. Well, that's just to be clear here for people who don't know that's the meaning of horse. That etymologically, the meaning of horse is associated with the phallus, right? That's the whole deal. Mm. Isn't that what we came to? I thought that's in Olympia that was what we found.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was everywhere. It was a sausage fest. It was just funny because I had no idea, knowing, like, I had spent all of these months like preparing, like doing this research and coming to the conclusion that horse was the phallus and blah 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 blah, and right, then I walk in and that's all you guys are talking about. It was like crazy. We're talking about the zebra.
Yeah,
what? No, but you guys were talking about, oh, it was a zebra and their penis and blah 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 blah.
Right. It's true.
I remember, and we were standing right at the coop.
Helter Skelter is Babel. They look the same, you know. They got a fucking spiral going up them. It's really straightforward. But anyway, when you get to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide. But where I wanted to, you know, which brings me to the
Will,
other point.
I'm sorry. Will, do you know that the last question of Radio 8 Ball was, why is zebra such a dick?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard that. I haven't seen that yet, but I heard that. Like, we were talking about that because when I got there, it was at the end of Radio 8 Ball. The first people I came across was Joe Alexander and Stephen Wilner. Wilner was twisted and wanted to go to bed, so we ushered him inside. And then Joe and I walked by. As soon as I walked by the park, I knew it was what Andras had written about, because you can just look at it and tell. So once I had met up with everybody, I'm talking to David, and I'm like, let's go back to the tree. And it was at the bottom of Malkuth, or right where the tree started, that, you know, David's laying all of the shit that just happened on me. And I believe he said it there. But that's when I started jumping up and down going, are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is,
yeah, that was
this
crazy.
Is insane. It's insane. It was crazy.
Right. I know. So, okay, just to make, you know, the point of the thing is that if you add an Aleph to Barak to make it serious, you're literally adding the fool to rejuvenate the tree at the head. So you realize, like, the fool extends from Chokhma to Bina.
Right.
From Keter to Bina. From Keter to Chokhma, sorry. So I'm tired. I'm visualizing it though. So is that it's the first pathway. And to spell out Aleph, Lamed, Pei equals 111. And so by them doing that, they made, it's not just that there's an association between and Sirius and the way of the lightning flash down the tree, starting with the fool. It's that the fool is Aleph. And by adding the Aleph is how you get to Sirius. Hmm. It's the fool. And so if you imitate that in the world, then you'll see the results of, you know, of the supposed to happen, of the whole purpose of the rituals described in the Golden Bough. And things are so fucked up, and they've been so fucked up that all this is basically an empire that's refusing to do everything but that. It won't allow that to happen. It's like you can't add the Aleph to get to, and which is interesting because that's supposed to be their whole stairway to Sirius. How are you guys going to get to Sirius with that?
Well, I mean, the question still remains, who is more foolish, the fool or the fool who follows?
That's right.
That's all you got is that's right.
Is that a Gandalf quote?
No, that's a even
that's,
better.
That's Gandalf quoting.
That's Obi-Wan quoting Gandalf. No, that's an Obi-Wan Kenobi quote. Oh. When they're in the Millennium Falcon and they land on the Death Star and they come out of his smuggling things and he's like, "You're a fool," and he's like,
"Right."
He's like, "Who's more foolish, the fool or the fool follows?" But it's weird that you're making these comments about, like, okay, so you can see the dog is the horse. Do you know what I mean? And all you have to do is add the fool to get to Sirius.
Well, yeah, you add Olive. And so that's, and then that's the ox, and it's a sacrifice. It's this whole crazy thing, man.
Oh, shit. Fuck.
What's that?
Fuck, that's just, you just laid some shit on me in processing.
Yeah, some crazy shit. Because then if you look at, like, this is the whole deal, dude, is that fucking 2001 A Space Odyssey. Thank God for fucking Horse Lover Fat, Will Synchro Sphere. Because he actually, like, not, because that was the theory that I was proposing.
He loves fat dicks.
Was this
Horse Lover Fat?
Yeah. He's a horse.
But the gematria of this of the titles from 2001, A Space Odyssey. So if you add them all up, it equals 777. For real. I just went through the trouble the other day to fucking add it up again and make sure. Because it just, I can't believe that.
Hey, wait.
It's weird.
Before we go any further, I have to remember, because I saw this the other day. I commented on Horse Lover's blog post like a few weeks ago, and I thought I clicked the thing for Blogger to notify me if he responded, but I guess I didn't, or it glitched or something.
Uh-huh.
The dude responds that he would like to come, that he would like, if the offer still stands, he's changed his mind and would like to come on Always Record.
Oh, I like that.
I would love to talk to him.
I know.
Like, so,
I know, David, I know you wanted to do that for so long, and I wanted to pat. I'm like, we got to reach out to him. We got to make this happen.
Sure. Good. Let's do it. Fuck yeah. So,
Scotland's he's Scottish, though, isn't he?
I think he's in Dublin.
He's in Dublin.
Oh, Irish. My bad. Don't be mad at me, horse lover.
So, do you see this picture that I dropped in here? Are you able to see that?
Yeah, I can see it. What's it in reference to?
Says, is all our life then but a dream, seen faintly in the golden gleam? Athwart time's dark, restless stream, bowed to the earth with bitter woe, or laughing at some rary show, we flutter something to and fro.
Idly.
Is that what this says?
Idly. Like
idly. Idly. We flutter idly to and
fro. Okay. Idly. I should actually pull out my
man's
pull out my
little
book.
Day.
It
man's,
looks okay, exactly yeah, sorry, like yeah. The D in spend on the next verse. So yeah, that's a okay. D. Idly to and fro.
Man's little day in haste we spend, and from its merry noontide send no glance to meet the silent end. Now look at the first letters to make an acrostic. This is the dedication page to Sylvie and Bruno.
Is a bowman?
Bowman, yeah, Bowman.
Yeah, but the first is a bowman.
Yes, but it's actually dedicated. Like, if you look at the Alice in Wonderland, he has an acrostic that spells out Alice's, like Alice Tiddell.
Mm-hmm.
As the dedication. Well, this is the same thing. It was a woman named Isa Bowman.
Isa. Okay. Right. Isa Bowman.
Which I think, actually, I could be wrong, but I think, isn't that...
Well, I like the way that it has the word golden bowed. It says golden gleam.
Right.
Well, let's remember that the first film Sharon Tate was ever in was fucking Day of the Arrow, where they kill the king with the bow and arrow, and that's the most overt. That's as overt as the Wicker Man when it comes to the Golden Bough.
Well, so check this out. So
hold on, I'm going to go get a beer. I'll be right back. Right.
Isa or Isa or however you would say that. This is another name for Jesus. This is like Saint Isa. Or this is something I learned from Jason Barrera when we were working on the Yogic Gospel of Thomas, that there's this idea that there's this other character named Isa, and that people think that's the same, describing the same historical person, ISSA. Anyway.
Have you ever heard of River World?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so go on with what you're saying because I don't want to interrupt. And then
so, David, you're talking about the credits, the title credits to 2001: A Space Odyssey. I'm talking about the title credit, basically the title credits to a Lewis Carroll book, right?
Oh, these are not title credits, but the, you know, Dawn of Man, Jupiter Mission, 18 Months Later, Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite, just those.
Yes, no, I know.
Oh, you know what I'm saying. Okay.
I know exactly what you're saying.
Okay.
I'm trying to make a comparison that here we have another piece of work with literally Bowman in the name, like it's dedicated to Bowman. Will, you made a, I love that you caught what I was, where I was going, is a Bowman, right? Is the actually what it says. But this is, not only is it Is All Our Life Then But a Dream, this is a book that details basically what we find in The Nightmare or The Sleep Paralysis and all the sort of slipping between worlds.
It's interesting, I mean, because Bowman is also Bowman, and we were talking about a ship to the land of the dead in a big way, but also like the whole work with Kevin Halcott and the Duat being representation of Sirius and so forth. There's just a lot there. It's pretty loaded. Life is but a dream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. When you're
I don't even want to focus on just the stanzas of this poem. I mean, you could dissect this a million different ways, but my point is, this book has a preface that explains. I posted this on Facebook for anyone on my own personal Facebook page for anyone who wants to look at it. Literally detailing the same kind of thing you're going to find in Mothman stories, UFO abduction war, Sweep the Nightmare.
I know what you're trying to crank up, but what I want is for you to explain what you're talking about as far as Alice in Wonderland goes a little bit more thoroughly and what that has to do with like sleep paralysis and whatnot.
Well, okay, so with Alice in Wonderland or Sylvie and Bruno?
The actual Alice in Wonderland that you've been referencing. Well, I mean, okay.
All right, what I put up is, so Lewis Carroll has another book which he says he's trying to do something different from Alice in Wonderland, but obviously he still wants to do so. Like, instead of falling into this nonsensical world, he has a nonsense world, which is actually the world of fairies and the human world, and he shows how they keep interacting and bleeding through. And
right.
I'm going to try and read real quick here, just what I clipped out of the preface to the book. It says, "It may interest some of my readers to know the theory on which this story is constructed. It is an attempt to show what might possibly happen, supposing that fairies really existed and that they were sometimes visible to us and we to them, and that they were sometimes able to assume human form, and supposing also that human beings might sometimes be conscious of what goes on in the fairy world by actual transference of their immaterial essence, such as we meet with in esoteric Buddhism. I have supposed a human being to be capable of various psychical states with varying degrees of consciousness as follows. A. The ordinary state with no consciousness of the presence of fairies. B. The eerie state in which, while conscious of actual surroundings, he is also conscious of the presence of fairies," which to me sounds exactly like the sleep paralysis. You have your surroundings plus the foreign entity.
Right.
C, a form of trance in which, while unconscious of actual surroundings and apparently asleep, he, i.e. his immaterial essence, migrates to other scenes in the actual world or in fairyland and is conscious of the presence of fairies. I also have supposed a fairy to be capable of migrating from fairyland. He goes on to say the reverse of that, that the fairies can come over to our world through similar states. And then it says he tabulates in each chapter which of these different states of consciousness the characters are in to describe how the worlds are bleeding together. Basically, are they perceiving, at what level is their perception in each scene? And he gets this chart, and one of the, and two of the items in the chart are sleepwalking.
Okay, so this is a preface from what?
Sylvie and Bruno. It's
by
Lewis Carroll, the author of
Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
So if anybody is like really questioning the esoteric nature of what artists put into their fucking work, I mean, this is like blatantly silly.
And the book is dedicated to Bowman.
Right.
That was what, okay. The other thing.
Dig that. Hey, remember, guys, that in fucking Eyes Wide Shut, Kubrick went to the trouble to make a giant fucking billboard that said Bowman. A giant billboard that was only that he literally rearranged. I think that it had to have happened twice or something. I forget where the move the fucking billboard from one spot away. Like it was like he inserted the thing and then removed it and then put it like it was just come on, dude.
Without explaining or going into depth on why I think the fairy world is like the land of the dead. I think that's
I want you to explain that a little bit though, because that. Like, basically...
That's significant. I mean, that's what happens to Bowman at the end of the movie, right?
Did you guys see... Oh, this is important. So,
Have you ever read 2001, A Space Odyssey?
Of course. I'm sorry. The Jack Parsons connection with the guy who did fucking Pan's Labyrinth. So
Guillermo del Toro.
Del Toro fucking stated... That was his source. They asked him his source of inspiration or whatever in an interview, and he literally said Jack Parsons, Sex and Rockets. And I was like, you got to be kidding me, dude! Pan's Labyrinth. Jack Parsons did a hymn to Pan every time he fucking sent a rocket out, and I was just tripping out on that whole that whole thing.
Well, Dale
talk
Toro
about analysis, talk about the Moonchild. That's the whole deal. What do you think Rosemary's Baby is about? Sleep paralysis.
If you watch Hellboy 2. And if you watch Hellboy 2 and you watch the extra features, there's like some behind the scenes type of shit where he's walking you through the sets and stuff and over the land to the fairy world, because that's what they do. And there's like, I think it's the George Washington Bridge. I think I remember that because the George Washington Bridge is used often in media as like this.
What are you saying is the George Washington Bridge?
The George Washington Bridge is used often in media as this doorway to other realities. So anyways, in Hellboy 2, I think it's up underneath the George Washington Bridge that there's a gate to the fairy world. And over the gate to the fairy world, and this is Guillermo del Toro's movie, Hellboy 2, The Golden Army. And over the fairy world entrance, there's this phrase that says Unus Mundi. And he says in it, I mean, flat out in the extra features of this this DVD, in the extra features, he's sitting there going, it's like right above here, it says Unus Mundi. That's a Jungian joke. Look it up. And then he moves on to something else. And, of course, Unus Mundi is like one world. It's the phrase of one world. It's the Jungian idea that everything comes from one source. But of course, it's exactly what we're talking about. That's like funny to me because, I mean, to think that
can I tell you a quick joke about in like my grandmother told me this joke, I think. So the George Washington Bridge in New York has two levels. So like when you're getting on the bridge,
One's cars, one's pedestrians. Is that correct?
No, okay. Not at all.
They're both
cars. Because so basically, it's a way to get extra traffic across the bridge. It's basically like like a second floor of the bridge. You can so you're going on and you could take.
But there is a ramp for pedestrians. Is that correct?
George Washington Bridge. I think
it's used often in.
Anyway, so to say, it's the George Washington Bridge. It has two floors, basically, like a first floor and a second floor. So when you're getting on to say, do you want to take the lower passageway or the upper roadway? And I think it was my grandmother told me this joke that they, like, they would say, the older people from New York would say, are you getting on the George or the Martha? And I was like, the George or the Martha? And the Martha was the lower level. It was a reference to missionary position that basically George Washington Bridge, so Martha's laying under him. So the idea that your passageway to the other world or the one world or all this sort of stuff would be happening in a basically a sexual union, a giant sexual union, which is the bridge.
Jupiter and his consort?
Right. Who chopped down the cherry tree.
Right, and chopped down her cherry tree, if you know what I'm saying.
You guys are great. Okay, so I think it's in the Dark Tower where the priest from... I'm pretty sure this is correct. The priest from Solomon's Lot crosses the bridge, and once he goes across the George Washington Bridge, he's in another reality. But I think it's also the George Washington Bridge. Isn't that the bridge that they go across in The Wiz?
No, that's the Brooklyn Bridge.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
I always look at that painting of the Delaware and think of River Styx. So there's that.
Hmm.
Yeah, bear in mind, there's a lot. So Manhattan is an island. So there's multiple bridges. And I think that's. So I'm just sort of. That's why my ears perked up, because I want to make sure your information is accurate.
Probably not, but. Well, I mean, it's just weird because. I mean, New York is Oz. You can't deny that. You can't.
NYOZHALIBM.
So right. I mean, it's
so
been,
this is absolute like mindfuck city.
Till Tuesday.
So Alex Fulton has the whole thing with, you know, the 666 days prior to Stanley Kubrick's death was the day that the first time that a computer chess, the computer itself was admittedly modeled after the monolith from 2001 and was built by IBM, which is each one that are removed from HAL. So he also was looking at. So 6 before 111, so 1101, that was when Stanley Kubrick died. So, you know, the Babylonian Sun Square is composed of 111 equals 666. 111 is the value of Aleph, which is the fool, thus making him the fool archetype once again.
Oh, shit.
It happens every time, but, I mean, that's crazy, degree of it.
Okay,
Then 237 days after Stanley Kubrick died was the release date of Being John Malkovich, which is crazy because fucking John Malkovich was in Color Me Kubrick, which was essentially Being Kubrick. If you get what I'm saying? That's weird. And John Cusack was born the day and year that fucking Rosemary's Baby was born. The day that gets inferred. Not just inferred, it's literally gives you the date. Yeah, they give you the date of Andy. So then that's Andy is the fucking name of Rosemary's Baby or Adrian. You know, they say Andy. And then you're like, oh, well, that was the name of the fucking kid in Toy Story. And Toy Story came from the Uncanny and is all about fucking Freud, you know, book The Uncanny, which was the inspiration with The Shining, which is why all The Shining references. They're not just like homages to fucking Kubrick with 237 in the floor pattern and shit. But then you have the fucking Buzz Lightyear and the cowboy show up in fucking Andy Kaufman's music video of If You Believe They Put a Man on the Moon. So you have If You Believe They Put a Man on the Moon goes back and forth between fucking astronauts and cowboys, the REM video, and Michael Stipe is a fucking total ringer for John Malkovich.
And REM is a dream state.
Right.
Right. Is a dream state and dream story, Eyes Wide Shut. It's the whole fucking thing, dude. It's crazy.
Hmm.
Okay, so it's George Washington. No, it's not. It's the Brooklyn Bridge and Hellboy 2.
Cool. Oh. Okay. Well, that's the same as The Wiz.
That's the same as The Wiz.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Well, that's even more poignant.
Right. So that is actually more poignant because then the road to Oz is the road to the underworld.
The ectoplasm medium, Joanna Krause, to take command. With Krause in charge, the team tracks the Tooth Fairy to the Troll Market, an enormous city hidden under the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right. I remember that movie. I saw it in the theater. That was crazy.
Well, that's a very poignant movie. And, I mean, that guy, obviously, if he's mentioned... See, I don't know. Like, if somebody knows about Jungian symbolism and shit... Does that really, like, mean that they're creating... I mean, is this a nefarious, or...
I don't know what the fuck. But how is it that there's 111 days of the year left after 9/11, and that fucking Stanley Kubrick died 666 days before 111? I'm just saying, that's fucking crazy. I can't get over that.
Oh, fuck.
You get it? Because that's, yeah. Then that's fucking serious? I don't know how they did that. In both directions? Give me a fucking break. That's insane, dude. That's insane.
But you're implying that there's a they that did that.
No, I don't know how the fuck they happened. These people who died. You know, I mean, he died on this day, and he, with all these people making this film, doing this whole thing. I mean, I'm just saying that that's how did that happen?
Right, because that was one of my points. This was, I think, one of the things that sort of made me look at things from a little bit of the opposite perspective, was when looking at James Shelby Downer's work with the JFK assassination, and it was like he lays out all these details as a quote unquote they, as the conspiracy, they made this happen, and it was like the motherfucker dies. I have to. He dies on, I think, March 15th, which is the – I should actually look this up, but I'm pretty sure he
– March 7th.
What's up?
Isn't it March 7th, I thought?
James Shelby Downer.
Oh, no. I thought you were talking about Kubrick's death. Yeah, I can't even remember what it was.
He actually died on March – this is – Wikipedia says March 16th. So, because I was thinking March 15th is the Ides of March. That's the day Caesar dies, right? But, and March 17th is the anniversary of when Osiris dies. So he dies in between these 2 days. He also dies almost exactly on his own birthday.
Oh, but that's the date that they did, that they circled in Alice in Wonderland in the Disney version with the oysters, right? On the calendar in the background.
Is what?
And then they released the Disney version the fucking day of when it happened again. March. What do the oysters have circled behind them on the calendar? There's a whole thing there.
Well, they circle the R, don't they?
Right, but they circled the day, didn't they? I mean, in Rosemary's Baby, she writes blood on October the 1st, so it's 1-1. And then she goes to the 1-1-1 Time Life building, and then she looks at the clock and it says 1-1-1. The whole thing is all of, and then the whole thing is the fucking golem, because you write Amet on the forehead of the golem, and you get rid of the golem by erasing the Aleph from Amet, so it goes from meaning truth to meaning death. And then Adam is a joke too, because then you add the Aleph to Dom, which is blood, and then you have the Adam. So they do this over and over again. They did it with fucking Sirius and lightning, and it's encoded into the meaning of the tree. It's crazy.
Well, I'm looking up. I don't think there was a specific date that's circled in Alice in Wonderland. What they do is they highlight the letter R in the month, and the idea is that, like, you eat oysters. Like, the reason the oyster looks at the calendar and freaks out is because it's basically like saying, oh, it's open season on oysters, because you're supposed to eat oysters in the month.
Only when there's ER.
When there's an R in the month. But at the same time, the idea of highlighting that single letter outside of it, right? So you have M-A in black, this bright red R, and then black C-H, and it's like it's this glowing red R, is kind of speaking to what you're talking about of the adding a letter, removing a letter, focusing on one letter in the word is essentially what's happening there.
Oh, well, that's interesting, though. I wasn't necessarily – there is a crazy Ides of March connection there somehow with the what was the release date of the Disney version of Alice in Wonderland that was the most recent? I can't remember. But it's, I think it's the date that gets something. Oh yeah, that's what it was. That's not the real fucking, that was the way the calendar was arranged. Wasn't the days lining up with the numbers was the way that it happened when they released Alice in Wonderland. It's been a while since I went into this one. I actually did an image to communicate it at one point.
Yeah, I'm also, I'm dealing with him, like when I was trying to give the significance of the downward dates, the stuff I haven't looked at in a long time. But I mean, that's why what I like, I really kind of, and I'm sorry to kind of keep pushing it back here, but I want to hear the correspondences between like Oz, Land of the Dead, Fairy World, because just to me it seems very significant right now. So if Will or David, if you would speak at all to that.
What are we talking about again?
Well, just the idea of the correlations between Oz as the Land of the Dead, okay, or this sort of,
well,
other
the most telling way to understand it is through the movie Oz, because the movie and the book are of very different. However, when Dorothy wakes up, you have to think about everybody who is in her little farmhouse community being dead in her mind. And she's like, and you were there, and you were there, and you were there. And do you know what I mean? Like all of the individuals who were in her dream, in quotations, of Oz are populated by dead individuals. But it goes much deeper than that. There are certain individuals who have talked about this. In particular is Patrick Carper, who we interviewed on Sync Book. He talks of the other world, and the other world is a concept of the Land of the Dead. A world that spans parallel to ours, where individuals who are in our life here are not the same there. Do you get what I'm saying? They have alternate realities. And it can also be seen in the, if you look at the Tree of Life, as far as Kabbalah goes, the two towers basically represent two different parallel worlds. And Oz, being the strength card that goes between them, is the one that signifies the connection between the two. Do you get what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, because it's bringing mercy, the magic, to severity. Bridge. So she's literally bringing mercy to severity by having her hands, right, in the mouth of the lion like that. And right. So obviously it's the beauty and the beast archetypes and all the symbolism that comes along with that. But
the beauty and the beast archetype has a lot to do with sex, though. So the connection.
So does this.
So the connection between the Land of the Dead, which would be judgment, and the Land of the Living, which would be mercy, the connection is sex, because the Land of the Dead
is
populated.
It's just on another level.
Yeah, the Land of the Dead is populated by those who are produced by sexuality or generation.
Right, well, it's a union of the two sides of the thing. So you have mercy and you have severity, but it's bringing mercy to severity. When you're looking at that pathway, you're literally looking at, so this is the whole thing, is that Ted is the serpent. It's the tefillin. So like when you wrap the tefillin down your left arm, that's you taking mercy from the right and bringing it to the left.
Right.
And then you end it with your Saturn finger, which is Shekinah. So you have this whole resonant thing taking place in three loops. So you have seven going down the arm for the seven lower spheres of the terrestrial, right? And then you have the supernal triad at the top, wrapped around Saturn, which is time. Then you wrap the rest around your hand from there. But the whole thing is like that action is supposed to be synonymous with the redemption. And so in this case, it's you know, you're looking at a sacrifice, But it's like, oh, we have to sacrifice to satisfy the Kleep boat. But instead of satisfying it with the fucking with the corruption, you're just you're sacrificing it with, you know, who is sacrifice. But like, I mean, it's crazy the level of symbolism that's, because literally they disappeared. Like, the towers literally disappeared. Like, I didn't get that. I'd heard people say that. But no, they literally disintegrated. There's almost nothing left of the towers. And I was watching news broadcasts and stuff. I was revisiting it. And, like, the people, like, I mean, you know, there's that researcher, Dr. Judy Wood. She has an epic presentation on this. She's, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen that. But it's crazy. But even beyond that, it seems to point to that there is energy weapons of some type utilized. And to basically be presenting something that could be used to end scarcity and all kinds of stuff. You know, like, oh, we have some fucking serious, serious military weapons. Even if you don't buy that with the towers, the fact is we're doing crazy experimental, you know, stuff with energy weapons. And there's a crazy amount of witnesses, you know, to see this stuff. And it's pretty strange if you think about it in terms of energy dynamics, you know. It's like, wow. You're literally, you know, performing the sacrifice for everyone to watch using technology that we could be used for just the opposite. So instead of, it's like trying to strengthen the empire as it exists without action for the real sacrifice to take place. So we get like this fucked up mock version of it. And it functions, but it only functions for limited. What do the Kleep boat do? They suck. The Kleep boat are the fucking succubi. They're the thing that's being pointed to, where we're like, that there's another thing, and it's ego.
Right. In Vietnam, the wind doesn't blow. It sucks.
Okay, so exactly. This brings
metal jacket.
You got me. Yeah, you get me. You get me. You get me.
So this brings it to another example of the Land of the Dead being the fairy world, which is Mothman, like you mentioned earlier, by John Keel. Now, this is fucked up. This is totally fucked up. John Keel has this. And now I've actually suffered from sleep paralysis before, many a times, actually. And it's something that I had to deal with because I didn't know what the fuck was going on. But I learned a lot from reading the Mothman Prophecies. Now, what the Mothman Prophecies has for its benefit is it gives a totally refreshing idea to the UFO phenomenon. And basically correlates it, like many have done, and including Jacques Vallée and Patrick Harper, as mentioned before. It includes the idea that UFO phenomenon are not aliens, but actually terrestrial. It is a in the same way that the 19th century used to look in the sky and see lights and think that it was a witch with a lantern on her broomstick. UFOs are aliens. Under what we would understand to be lights in the sky, as far as post, post the Industrial Revolution. So it's the idea that the fairies that are on the planet appear to us in the context that we would understand them of the times. Do you get what I'm saying? That's what John Keel basically presented in Mothman Prophecies. How it affects me as far as actual sleep paralysis was the idea that when I was asleep, okay, so the main context of sleep paralysis is when you're asleep and you see your room, it is your room. When you're asleep normally and you dream about your room, or you dream about your house, or you dream about your school, or you dream about your church, or you dream about a bridge like George Washington Bridge, you understand it to be those things, but it does not fit the characteristics of those actual things. It is just the hint or the feeling that those things are true. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, if you dream about, if you're in your house, it's not really your house. When you wake up, you're like, oh, I know I'm in my house.
It's like playing my house.
Right. Right. It's like somehow it was my house, but it was also like my elementary school.
Right.
And
it symbolized ideas more than it actually symbolized the physical characteristics of the actual place. During sleep paralysis, you could swear up and down that when you woke up, you were still in your fucking room. And that's the fucking weird shit. Like, things would be different. Like, a poster would be moving, or somebody with a plaid shirt or a hat or some fucking knives on their hands or some shit like that was inside your room. But it was your damn room. And there's a passage in John Keel's Mothman Prophecy where he's going to this actual location where the Mothman is seen often. I think it's called it's during World War II, it actually housed like bombs or something. I can't remember what the name of it was. If people who are familiar with the book, they know exactly what I'm talking about. But it was like a TNT area is what I think it was. It housed TNT. And the Mothman was seen a lot around this area. So he goes down there in the middle of the night to go check it out. And he gets out of his car and he walks across this area and he feels this enormous amount of fear. And he's almost reluctant to go back to his car because he doesn't want to cross this area again. And every time he crosses it, he feels this. So he thinks that the whole thing is electromagnetic. This was actually expanded upon by Michael Purslinger, but we'll get to him in a second. Anyways, so that idea, there was also, have you guys ever heard The Coming Race? Do you guys know this book? Let's see if I can remember by Googling. That's not really remembering, but The Coming Race, The Vril. Have you ever heard this before? Edward Buller Linton. We've talked about it a couple of times on 42 Minutes with Jeffrey Kripal. It was used a lot with the Nazis. The Vril, The Power of the Coming Race, was a story of an alternate race. This guy goes down to the center of the earth and he discovers this whole race that basically... they resemble the Mothman in a lot of different ways, but I don't think that that's really
the philosophical origin.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah, pretty
not
much.
Not just Nazi. The Nazis took this idea from theosophy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, the Vril is basically like the idea of a life power. So the Vril basically discover that there's a life force, Orgon, call it whatever you want. They fight over it and they almost destroy their entire race until they decide that they figure out how to use it. So the Vril, which Helen Belansky used it and then became the theosophical thing and then became the Hitler thing and so forth. And then pre-Nazi Berlin used it. And
you need to remind everybody the significance, because I forget these kind of things to tell people. But L. Frank Baum, who wrote The Wizard of Oz, is a theosophist, just so... Because sometimes right. People could be listening to this and they won't see how it all connects.
Right.
You know, like, even, like, you know, just.
It does. I mean, but that's what a SyncHead goes through. A SyncHead's brain makes these free associative, they free associate, like, mad crazy. So when you're watching a movie, when other people are just sitting there looking at, you know, this person's kissing that person, you're looking at the background and you're free associating why the fuck there's a fish in the background. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So I do the same thing with novels. Right. When I'm reading, I read the coming race, and then I read The Mothman, my brain made this linear connection between the description of the Vrilian and how the Mothman is expounded upon. And the Vril is a story about an energy inside of us, like Orgon or whatever the fuck you want to call it. And that we haven't discovered yet.
Bill Reich would call it, but.
Right? Yeah. But it's a sexual energy. And then in Mothman Prophecy, he makes a good. I mean, a lot of people, Robert Anton Wilson called it refreshing because it is. I mean, everybody gets stuck on this. It's alien. So everything that they see as far as UFOs are concerned leads them back to that initial thesis that they have. You know what I mean? Like, all of the evidence points to their already, you know, conformed theory. There's this great, yeah. I hate to digress, but there's this great quote in Sherlock Holmes. I've read all Sherlock Holmes. I've read all James Bond. Anyways, Sherlock Holmes has, I can't remember which one it was, but he goes to the scene of the death and the Scotland Yard are like, it's the husband, it's the husband, it's the husband. And Sherlock Holmes keeps pointing out this evidence. What about this blood splatter on the wall? And then the Scottish Yard, like, adapt what the new evidence is to fit their theory. And then he says, well, what about this? And they keep saying it's the husband. It's the husband until you know, Sherlock Holmes proves it's not the husband anymore. It can't be the husband because you guys are stuck on your theory. You're not looking at the evidence. And I think that that's the main thing. Everybody already has a theory about how things work, whether it be conspiracy or whether it be like, you know, sexual energy or orgon or ether or whatever. So they're not necessarily looking at the evidence anymore. They're just trying to fit the evidence to the theory. Anyways, that's what's so refreshing about John Keel. He totally obliterates what people think prior and creates this new theory. But the guy's bullheaded, and he's not like super intelligent either. So if you read the book and know how to pick up on the fact that he's getting certain answers wrong, you can peel out some and extract some information. So I combined the For Real, The Coming Race, with Mothman and figured out that that book has more to do with sexual energy than anything else.
Right, right, right. So that's the thing with the Sandman too. So you need to look at fucking Freud's The Uncanny, have you?
Mm-mm.
Trust me, dude.
I've listened to you talk about it so fucking
because he has this whole thing with the Sandman visiting the children and like this whole fucking deal. Like it's so real. They're all communicating the same thing. It's the fucking the Kleepote, the succubus, the Sandman, the Mothman.
It's
the
all
fucking...
sexual. It's all sexual energy. It's all sexual energy. So, when I would have the most profound incidences that I had of sleep paralysis were postcoital. Bottom line, postcoital. That gave me the hint. I would be, you know.
I just said at the beginning of this conversation before you came on that I've noticed that I get more sleep paralysis if I'm if I'm changing paradigms, I'm doing something I don't normally do.
Well, that brings up a whole nother topic. I mean, my brother once came to me before I had had sex. He had sex before me. We were only 6 months apart because he was my stepbrother. But he came up to me and he was like, "Hey, you know, when you have sex with an individual, you pick up certain traits by them." And I didn't believe him at first, but then I had sex with this girl who always popped her fingers, and then I ended up always popping my fingers. Yeah, and I know it's totally true. It's funny because if you think about in Genesis, they call the tree of knowledge, right? They call it the tree of knowledge. Don't eat from the tree of knowledge. But they also say that Adam knew his wife, or this person knew his sex is knowledge. It's fucked up. And that is sex is, I mean, I don't want people to get the wrong idea because they think I'm saying that sex is mystical or mystical is sex. No, mystical isn't sex. Sex is mystical. And then that's what we're fucking missing. And you know what? Wilhelm Reich had a whole bunch of ideas that were correct. I've read like three or four of his books so far, and all of his stuff is sound, but he was totally anti-mystical. He would not consider sex mystical.
Right. It's true.
And I think that's what
had a different, completely different interpretation of what mystical meant. And he had his area. This is the thing, like when you're looking at a researcher and they have their area. And it's like he wasn't a scientist, dude.
Right.
Wilhelm Reich wasn't a fucking scientist. He was interested in science. And he was also kind of naive in many respects.
Well, he experimented like a scientist.
But he fucking rocked the fucking boat.
He
really
experimented.
Did.
No. You base your opinion, and I don't mean to directly like antagonize you, but you base your opinion off of the book, you know, the function of the orgasm. And
yeah, that's my favorite. It's the staple of his works. Yeah.
There's so much fucking more after that. There's so much fucking.
I love the psychology of fascism. I mean,
that's a great book as well. That's a humongous book. But there's other books like the Superimposition book is incredible because it explains how sex relates to the freaking formation of galaxies and shit like that. It's fucking astounding. Sure.
Well,
I read that book
basic,
and I was blown away.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's an all of these people are taking from the traditions. They're all taking from the mystery schools, and that information wasn't exoteric, and they made it more exoteric. That was like their role, and to bring it into a new paradigm and to bring it into a new context. It was just, all of that was reintroduced. Freud took from Zohar left and right, abso-fucking-lutely. And the main distinction that I see between Freud and Jung is that Freud would admit it all over the place. Freud didn't have any qualms with telling you exactly where he got his ideas, whereas Freud wanted to be substantiated. He didn't want to get wiped out. He knew that they're in the middle of fucking, you know, they're in Vienna. They're right. not. They're like.
that's part of his downfall. That's part of his downfall is like, I mean, the reason that Wilhelm got onto the thread that he was on is because of something that Freud said that Freud actually rebuked later, which is the whole orgasm goes throughout the body like an electrical current. Wilhelm pushed that he pushed the envelope further, and Freud went back and said, no, everything's in the mind, that it has no physical. I say bullshit. I say fucking
Freud
bullshit. Thought,
Freud seemed to think that the more that you could dig, and when you got to the core, that you would fucking find that humans were essentially fucking just, you know, as evil as, you know, he didn't have much hope, and it was like, so what's the point then? Because he didn't.
Well, I mean,
didn't
but Bernays that, like, took that. Bernays proved that to a certain extent, but my point though would
no,
be
he
to
didn't.
Say
he
that
he just proved that the fucking layers of the
he utilitized it. I mean, there's no fucking doubt that he
right, but that doesn't
he
mean
made
that that's
it.
That's the fucking essence of who we are. It just means we're fucking.
Oh, absolutely not.
Until, you know,
it's just like you can exploit our downfalls for sure. You can exploit human ignorance to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And our main ignorance is sex. I mean, it is vibrant. And if you look at the Beauty and the Beast card, the Beauty and the Beast card is all about sex. I mean, I think it was either Jung or Freud. When I was investigating Andras Jones, I was forced to read a lot of Jung and a lot of Freud.
So you say forced, considering that was the original name of the strength card.
Right. Well, I mean, he turned it into fucking Crowley turned it into lust, but it's all about the physical being, you know, demanded upon by the spiritual. If you look at the Beauty is spirit and the Beast is matter, it's one animates the other one. I mean, the word animal comes from animate. And if you think of Beast as being an animal, it's the animal like the primal instinct of man sexually being dictated or controlled by the spirit. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you do realize, like, if you're looking at the Tree of Life and you see the separation of Ze'er and Shekhinah as Tiferet and Malkut, it's literally the force that's establishing the substitute that's in her place. She is a computer. She's like, if you're getting off on porn, seriously, I mean, that's the whole joke. I mean, for real, because you see that the lovers are separated. So you're looking at these two lovers who are also, you know, brother and sister, but we'll just ignore that because it's, you know, what about Bob? But there's this gulf between them, and she is in her exile. But the mate that Ze'er has in the meantime, in the interval to allow the empire, because Malkut literally means empire. And Shekhinah means dwelling. This is where we live, right? And so she's pushed to the bottom. But the meaning of the handmaiden is that he's not getting his, and if he'll go crazy if he just represses. So the whole tree is based on the idea of repression. That's why I insist that Freud got it from Zohar. Because they're literally describing the sexual repression that's taking place and the way that Ze'er gets fulfillment in the meantime. And so that there's poetry written from Ze'er's perspective in like Kabbalistic poetry that basically relays the suffering of Ze'er in Shekhinah's absence. Because he's having to, you know, he's having to get his needs met, but he's not there with his lover. So we don't actually get the real sex. We don't get what sex really could be. And that's what Wilhelm Reich is pointing to.
I hear your slapping sound emulating sex, but check it out. Like, it's funny because, like I was saying, like, it was either Jung or Freud who said the Beauty and the Beast fairy tale was about a woman having to leave her father and find another mate. Okay, so the original story is basically the father, like in the Disney movie. The Disney movie's not very far off, but the story is the father's going to, like, he's going to a distant area to sell some shit, and all of the daughters, there's multiple daughters, not just Belle, but multiple daughters are like, bring me this, bring me that. They want all this shit. But when he goes there, he can't, all Belle asks for, when Belle means beauty, all Belle wants is a rose. She asks for the most simplest thing. The father can't get or meet any of the other, the girl's demands. So he comes back and he's like, what am I going to do? Like, I can't just come back with all this shit missing, blah, 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 blah. So he finds this rose garden and he pulls a rose, what ends up being the Beast Rose Garden. So you can see almost always rose is like a symbol of love, a sexuality, because of the whole pistol stain and what, blah, 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 blah.
Well, no, I mean, the rose was the symbol of Shatina in the oldest tradition of the thing. Right. I mean, that was, if you want to hear a great fucking talk, listen to the Venus Blueprint from, I forget his name, mm-hmm. but we had a guest on one time that blew my mind because he went to this temple. Mm-hmm. But the rose is the center of the whole thing. So mm-hmm. before Mary. Like, early, that was his whole point. Like, this became a symbol associated with Mary. But, like, that...
It's sex. So
everything points to a religion that was mostly wiped out. That there was a religion that was all based on the rose, feminine, all this stuff.
And but the
we,
dad
we
can't
killed all
give.
The fucking witches, and we killed fucking everybody who, you know... We destroyed it. We got rid of a religion, basically. Yeah. But there's signs of it everywhere.
Right, because it can't be suppressed. It's just the killing of the original feminine over and over. And I mean, even now, ISIS is the main... And I fucking walk through life, and I'm just like, motherfuckers, they're like, ISIS is evil. I'm like...
Right, look at how they did that.
Damn, look at what they did to you guys. You guys don't even realize.
They pulled that one off. That's like Tool getting everyone to wear shirts that say Tool on them.
Right, it's an obvious penis. Everybody knows it's a penis.
There's another tool. Where there's that as well. But I mean, just the joke of everyone like basically being a tool, like that's such a great fucking. You're like, oh yeah, everyone has a fucking tool hat on. What the fuck?
Yeah,
bunch of tools.
Satan is my motor.
right. Look at what is the, like all the people wearing the T-shirts that say "Obey Propaganda." Like I get, you know, even if it started ironically,
it doesn't matter.
No, the irony is the whole point. Yeah. The irony is what makes things spin. It's the wheel of fucking fortune.
And it's people thinking that they're not susceptible to hypnosis when just about everybody is fucking susceptible to hypnosis to greater or lesser degrees. But thank God we got Scientology to fucking weed out who the most susceptible people are so they can use various science.
How does the fool become the king?
I don't know, but isn't it weird that fucking Jim Carrey's girlfriend died during the Scientology shit she had to go through?
I don't even fucking want to touch Jim Carrey. It's too fucking crazy.
But that just happened. You heard that news?
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what. And how is that not exactly the plot of fucking number 23? I mean, it's fucking insane.
Oh,
and it's funny, you were talking about Man on the Moon earlier.
Yeah.
The number 23.
He shares a birthday with Andy Kaufman, let's not forget.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure. But the guy. Okay.
Dude,
so, Paul Giamatti's character in the number 23 is a real individual. And that individual. No, wait. Paul Giamatti's character in The Man on the Moon.
Yeah, on the Moon, yeah.
Okay, which is Andy Kaufman's double, actually appears in the number 23. He actually appears in The Man on the Moon, too. Also, he appears in The Man on the Moon also. Because that is a real individual who doubled Andy Kaufman. And that guy was a security guard in Man on the Moon.
Right.
When he ushers out both Paul Giamatti and Jim Carrey out of Studio 32, which is 23 backwards, in The Man in the Moon, but he actually is the hotel counter guy, the guy who runs the hotel in the number 23. And that's his only two credits on IMDb.
Huh, really?
Yeah, it's funny.
No fucking way.
Yeah, it's funny. It's totally intentional. It's totally intentional.
Yeah,
how could that not be intentional?
Right. That's crazy.
It's great.
That's like the psychiatrist from A Clockwork Orange. He shows in the pictures with the purple hair. And she's like only in like three movies or something. And one of the other movies is How I Won the War with John Lennon, where she has like the super short scene. It's like, what the fuck?
What the fuck?
Isn't the plumage beautiful?
They're banking on the fact that there's no, I mean, well, I don't think people understand. There is a group of individuals called Sinkheads who pay attention to detail.
So have you ever seen The Stalking Moon? With no. I think it's Eva Saint Marie or Eva Marie Saint. I forget how it goes. But she her birthday is the birth is July 4th, 1924, which is 3 years after The Gold Room. I thought it was the same day and year, but no. But that came out on Christmas 1968, the year of Rosemary's Baby. There's all this crazy mystical connected shit with The Stalking Moon. But where was I going to go with that? There's a whole thing that's crazy because her first film that she was ever in the 1940s was a Christmas Carol, and then she came out with The Stalking Moon on Christmas the year that, because it's not just that Oh Rosemary's Baby was made in 1968, it's that they wrote that on her as they were doing the impregnation thing, you know, the inception. So that's like, you know, which is like a total fucking sleep paralysis fucking clefotic crazy deal that they're like portraying, which is the reason why fucking Rosemary's Baby and fucking 2001 A Space Odyssey are the exact same length from their fade-ins, as far as I can tell. I'm speculating, but is that they're both conveying Jack Parsons' writings and manifesting it using fucking, like, you know, all kinds of hypnotic suggestion and whatever, but like a whole other level of it, you know. Like, they're basically, the two films are about the Moon Child from two different perspectives. One of the Messiah is the Star Child, and one is as the demon. But I can't get over the fact that fucking John Cusack was fucking born on the day and year that Andy was born, the baby was born in fucking Rosemary's Baby, and that he's a JC, and that fucking Jim Carrey's a JC, and Jim Carrey with the fucking man on the moon sharing a birthday with Andy Kaufman and all this weird shit. It's so strange, man.
It's bizarre. I mean, I'm not going to fucking lie to you. The shit that happens in the sync realm of understanding is beyond fucking scary.
I mean, yeah, what was it? She was in an episode of fucking Moonlighting with Bruce Willis, Eva St. Marie, the Gold Room lady, Stalking Moon. The episode was called Fetal Attraction, and then right at the same time,
but there's no fucking way.
She did Fatal Frames, and then fucking Donald Pleasance. That was his final scene in his final film.
There's no fucking way. There's no fucking way that this is intentional human. Like, if we're dealing with anything, we're dealing with fucking either aliens or fucking AI. There's no way around it.
There's two things happening at once. I think you're looking at the detractus, where there's an actual underlying synchronicity that's like, you know, the essence of the thing is the dynamics of the vacuum of the principle of the matter. And then there's another imitation thing that's going in the opposite direction that actually meets up with the detractus, which is slightly askew. So it like imitates it to the best of its ability, and it only can go so far. And then that's fucking
baffled. I said this years ago, if anybody's like perpetrating sync, they're basically imitating nature. Because
the Kleepo are said to mimic tetragrammaton. That's the whole fucking
thing.
So they mimic it with the fuck and with the death penalties. So you have the there's the four death penalties correspond to the four Kleepo, and there's this whole crazy thing with the imitation that you achieve the results you're after, but they're temporal, and it's like the fucking monkey paw where you wish on it and then you get all this other shit. So it's basically you can prolong something for so long, but then it ends up killing itself, and then that's the meaning of the tree of death, which is referenced literally. I mean, it sounds like, ooh, you know, tree of life has a tree of death, dude. That's like, that's, and it actually,
the reverse tree, which we've already talked about tonight.
Right.
All right. Well, but look, hold on. I got to take a break. I'm going to go take a piss real quick.
Well, that's a good idea.
Is Alan around still?
It looks like he's there.
Oh, I'm still here. I felt like I was just going to let you guys go Because I kept being like, hey, then what about... Oh, never mind.
Well, it's the wrong two people to interrupt.
Yeah, we'll discuss Dave.
I thought I was bad.
I'm fucking sorry.
Well, whatever. You're from New York. If you want to fucking jump in at any second.
Right. I'm from Alabama. We don't get to talk as much as New Yorkers. Go fuck yourself.
About to lose it. Dude. Careful.
You'll have to listen to the replay.
Yeah, the 1 second where I was given the opportunity to speak, and my wife's like, "Oh, hey, guess what?" And I'm like, "Oh, wait, this was my chance. I'll never get a chance to speak again."
Okay, I gotta piss.
I said, buddy, I am afraid to be alone, 'cause I got some weird ideas in my head about things to do in Denver when you're dead. Snake Cafe, dressed in black, tossing back a shot of rye, finding things to do in Denver when you die. You won't need a cab to find a priest. Maybe you should find a place to stay, someplace where they never change the sheets. Just fool around Denver all day.
Thank you for listening to this broadcast from Syncbook Radio. If you enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Tune into our other Syncbook Radio programs, including 42 Minutes, Always Record, The Marty Leeds Mathmagical Radio Hour, Pentimental, Synchronize, Sync Quick News, as well as our most recent editions, Fine Just Fine and Hypnosis. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. You'll find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com.
And home is just a place to hang your head. Dream up things to do in Denver when you're dead. You won't need a cab to find a priest. Should find a place to stay, someplace where they never change the sheets, and you just hold